MacCast, Wednesday, February 18th, 2015. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to another episode of the MacCast. I have a fun show for you today because we are going to get together with a couple friends and do what we call one of our Amigos shows. So I've got Victor Cahiao and David Sparks here with me today, and we're going to be talking about some of the latest stuff that Apple has been up to, including our thoughts on the upcoming Apple Watch, some of these rumors surrounding the possible Apple Car or mapping car or whatever it may be, and then we get into a little bit of a discussion about Tim Cook's Apple, specifically a number of his green initiatives and our thoughts on that. So really fun episode for you today. But before we dive into everything, I need to take a quick moment and thank a couple show sponsors, starting with Lynda. You know, Lynda is a great place to go to get training, figure out how to do more things with your Mac. They are constantly upgrading their video tutorials. It's a perfect place if you know, we're a couple months into a new year here, and it's the perfect time to get on lynda.com and start expanding your tech skills, maybe learn something completely new. And they have over 3,000 video courses with topics like web development, photography, visual design, even business. And what I love about their courses is they're all taught by industry experts. These are leaders in their fields, and they're adding new courses all of the time. Every single week, they're adding new courses to lynda.com. So whether you're looking to set new financial goals for yourself, find a better work-life balance, maybe just even invest in a new hobby, something that maybe could lead to you being able to ask your boss for a raise, find a new job, improve upon your current job skills in 2015, lynda.com has something for everyone. And I love the fact that their courses span all skill levels. So they have great classes like iOS 8, iPhone and iPad Essential Training that can get you started if you're new to iOS, all the way up through something like Swift Essential Training, which is Apple's new programming language. So if you're thinking about maybe designing a new app, they have courses for that. One of my favorite new things that they've added recently is something called Code Clinic. This is a great series where each month they take a coding challenge and have some of their authors create video tutorials illustrating a solution in a different programming language. So you can see how different programming languages solve a similar or exactly the same problem. It's really neat stuff. And you can right now sign up for a free 10-day trial just by visiting lynda.com/maccast. And with that, you're going to get unlimited access to everything in the lynda.com library, access to the video tutorials on your tablets. That includes iPhone as well as Android and iPad. And you get access to all those new courses that they're adding every week. So why not invest in yourself? Sign up for a free 10-day trial by going to lynda.com/maccast. That's lynda.com/maccast. And go ahead. I challenge you to learn something new in 2015. This episode of the MacCast is also sponsored by Smile. They make PDF Pen Pro 7. PDF Pen Pro 7 brings new professional features to Smile's already versatile PDF editor for Mac OS X. With PDF Pen Pro 7, you can now edit OCR text directly from scanned pages. You'll be able to export Excel, PowerPoint, and PDF archive formats, as well as create PDF forms with interactive signature fields. Now, these are new features in PDF Pen Pro 7, including which add to the features that are also found in PDF Pen 7, things like updated modern design, so they take on that new clean Yosemite user interface. You can proof your OCR text from your scanned pages. They also added load and save performance improvements and compatibility with iCloud Drive, along with freeform highlighting to call out drawings and diagrams, that and a whole bunch more. So you're going to want to go check out all the new features that they threw into PDF Pen Pro and PDF Pen or PDF Pen 7 and PDF Pen Pro 7. If you want to get up to speed more quickly, actually, one of today's amigos, David Sparks, has done a great series of videos outlining a bunch of common tasks that you might perform with PDF Pen 7 and PDF Pro 7. So I'll have links to those in the show notes. I will note that PDF Pen 7 and PDF Pen Pro 7 do require OS 10 Yosemite, so you're going to need to be running the latest version, but it's really great stuff, and you can learn more about it as well as check out all of the other great apps from Smile over at smilesoftware.com/Maccast. So check that out, and a big thank you to both Smile and Linda for their support of the show. So with that, let's get right into our conversation with David Sparks and Victor Cajiao.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Victor. How you doing?
Hola.
Hola, amigos.
It is the Amigos podcast. And unfortunately, we're short one amigo because we were hoping to have Ken Ray, but he is extremely busy, so we totally understand how that goes, life of the podcaster and juggling all those sorts of things. And, you know, this started out with Ken, Victor, and myself back in the day, for those of you who remember, and we were the three amigos, and we brought Dave in at some point. So now I haven't come up with a good replacement name, so I think just Amigos works. I don't think we have to put a number on it, right?
I was really worried I wasn't going to make the cut, frankly, so I just want to let you know I'm really happy.
You know? Well, you know, it's like...
Did you get those chocolates I sent?
Or Los Amigos.
No, we couldn't give up your voice at all. And you guys are really helping me out, because part of the reason this is happening is because right now I'm actually not here.
Sweet.
I'm at Kennedy Space Center in Florida doing some sightseeing.
Wow.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
I bet you're having a great time.
Actually, as we're recording this, I'm probably giving a presentation there. I'm lucky I get to go do a little talk, a presentation to NASA folks on Apple stuff. So
really, that's
great.
That's
awesome. Yeah. So it was a vacation thing that turned into a work thing through some connections. So
yeah, we got a NASA guy on our show, Skip Owens.
That's my NASA guy too. He's the one who helped me out. Yeah, he arranged it so we can get in and get some little extra stuff while we're there. So we're there for something else, and yeah, Skip's a great guy. So
awesome.
And the trade off was, hey, can you come, you know, talk to us about some Mac workflow kind of stuff. And
when he told me that they were using my paperless book at NASA, like I'm sure it wasn't like the gospel for them, but it was one of the resources when they were figuring out their paperless workflow. You had to like pull me off the ceiling. I was so excited. You know, I grew up loving, you know, everything about the space program. So
yeah. And I've never been out there, so I'm looking forward to it. So it should be fun. But, to that end, you know, the show has to go on. So that's going to be this episode. And people just love these anyway. So thank you guys for agreeing to come on for another one.
And hi, Skip. I'm Victor. If you want to be my NASA guy, I'm available.
we'll get you introduced at some point. He's also a Big Mac guy. So he's great. I definitely have plenty of stuff to talk about. I think we're just going to kind of do like we do with these Amigo shows and just dive into topics and see where it leads. And I think the thing we kind of need to lead off with, because it's really just around the corner, and then I know we've all talked about it separately. I think Victor and you and I talked a little bit about it recently. But you know, there's been some changes also recently. Apple Watch.
It's coming, Apple baby. Watch.
Apple Watch. I'm starting to reach that point where I don't know how I feel about it. I think I'm getting more excited, actually. I think there was a period there, because it's been so long since it's, you know, between when Apple announced it and when we're actually getting it, that I kind of lost interest a little bit. Not really lost interest, but just you get tired of the rumors and the stories and when is it coming and speculation. And now that it seems like we're getting close to that actual reality, now I'm starting to get that jazzy feeling again.
Yeah, I found myself the other day, I had a rough day, and I consoled myself with tea and the Apple Watch timekeeping page. That's what kind of nerd I am. I went
that's
to the page,
a good page,
and I started looking at all the different faces and fantasizing about well, I should use this face with these additional, you know, functions on. There's a special name for it now. I already forgot what they're called. Oh, and complications. Complications.
And they have little animations, right?
Apple is taking the terminology from classic, you know, timepieces. And so I'm sitting there looking at which faces I want on this watch. So I guess that means I'm excited about it, Adam.
Isn't that such an anti-Apple word, too?
Complications. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it really, like you said, Dave, it goes to, you know, what right. they're modeling this after, you know, this traditional watch terminology, watch obsession that people who are into analog watches are, you know, Apple obviously wants you to follow suit with this new device that they're introducing. And Adam, I was just the opposite. When we first heard about it, I wasn't that excited. And then it hit me about 3 weeks ago and I was like, I'm excited about this product. I can't wait to see it and to see how they're going to market it, to see how they're going to position it to the different segments of the market. It's just really exciting stuff because even though it's going to be a new product, I think that this approach that they're taking for watch aficionados, for making this a fashion statement, is going to really create a whole different type of user of what we traditionally think of as a watch.
Yeah. I think the amigos need to reunite the day this thing arrives. The day all three of us have one, we need to reunite.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
I remember the day the iPad came out. For some reason, I did a show with Adam that day. Maybe it was Adam's show or it was our, I don't remember whose show it was, but you and I were just sitting here gushing over these iPads.
Yeah.
There's probably no useful content in it at all, but we were so excited.
Kids with a new toy on Christmas morning.
Yeah, I always knew they were going to do the watch. I mean, it felt to me like that was a natural fit, but I wasn't, you know, overly excited as it was coming out because I figured they'd do something great, but I wasn't really into the speculation so much as I just wanted to see what they'd do. And I know this is a G1 product, you know what I mean? I'm sure it'll get better and thinner and all the usual things Apple's dubbed us. But, you know, there's just something really special about when they get into a new product category, that first product.
Yeah, it's the pioneering one. And I think, you know, you mentioned it's a Generation 1 product. And that was one of those things where it was easy to have some detractions. So another thing that happened, you know, just a couple weeks back is they came out with the developer kit. And I think being a developer, one of the first things that was pointed out is, it's very limited in terms of, you know, what developers have access to and they can't write native apps and this, that, and the other. And there were a lot of people kind of down on it. But what's happened in the weeks since developers have had that thing is we're starting to see what developers actually can do with the limited functionality that it does have. And I mean, I think we've seen some games, we've seen a pretty interesting to-do list sort of concept. And that's kind of actually getting me jazzed because I'm going, you know, this is just like when they first brought apps to iOS. You know, they were kind of limited and they weren't really doing a lot, but developers are super creative people. So you're already seeing these guys like thinking and rethinking and working and reworking. And that is kind of getting me jazzed too, because I think they're going to be able to do a lot more stuff than we actually think they can.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Dave. I think that you're right, Adam, that this, keeping the SDK to only certain functions is going to bring the creativity out of the developers to say, how much can I squeeze out of just this, you know, to be able to make my application integrate with what they're giving me. I think that that just gets the juices going and that it's going to be a very good way to introduce people to the UI and how they can get the best out of it for their use. You know, I think that everybody's going to have a specific set of uses that they're going to get out of this G1 product that's going to, we've talked about it before, make it work, you know, 4 or 5 use cases that will say that pays for the watch for me.
Yeah, and I think really the big issue here, and the thing Apple's been a little silent on so far, is battery life. More important than having an iPhone or an Apple Watch, it's going to take me a while to get used to this, but the more important is having an Apple Watch that can play third-party apps or play a game or whatever, is when you look at your watch at dinner time, it needs to tell you what time it is.
Yeah.
And I think that is just so critical. And I think they know that if they release an amazing watch that where the battery dies before dinner, it's a fail and it's going to be written up as a fail. And because it's Apple, it's going to be blown way out of proportion comparison to other watches. But that's a huge deal for them. So the developer kit gets these mandatory limitations, and I think it's all engineered around we don't want this thing burning processor cycles at all. I mean, right. If you look at the developer kit, most of the processing is done on your phone, and all the Apple Watch is doing is receiving a message, and the result of that is it's a very simplistic developer kit, but then. It's going to, I've talked to, you know, through the show and just Max Sparky and stuff, I know a lot of developers and they're all saying, oh yeah, I'm totally able to do this because it's not hard. I mean, it's not a lot of work to write an app for the Apple Watch because all you're doing is just throwing text at it or throwing a table view at it or something. It's not difficult. So
it's a view extension of your app in a lot
exactly.
of ways.
So the added benefit is when this thing's out for a month or so, there's going to be thousands of apps available. Like anybody who can find a justification to extend their iPhone app to the phone is going to do it because it's not that hard.
I think it's going to be very much like what we saw with Notification Center widgets. You know, it's the same kind of thing. I was going to ask you, Dave, did you see Ken Case's tweet about being there day one? That got me jazzed too. Yeah,
it makes sense.
He said, you know, just like on the iPad and the iPhone, you know, we'll be there with something day one.
So. Yeah. No, it makes total sense for OmniFocus. I mean, just pushing, you know, the critical tasks to your watch down with that, man. I'm in.
What do you guys think about the whole fashion side of it? I've never been a real fashion person. I mean, I'm a nerd, right?
Well, I did learn the word horology, and it...
Ah, yes.
That made me feel like I was really smart.
The world's oldest profession?
Hey now, you know, but I think, you know, they're doing what they need to do. And I think it's what they did was pretty clever. So, you know, everybody wants different bands. Let's make the bands ourselves. They see the sale numbers from the Apple Store of all these people buying cases and everything. Why not get in on it?
Yeah. I think we're going to have people doing what the equivalent to a build to order model, you know, where they're going to be able to buy the watch and buy one or multiple bands, you know, especially for the middle of the line and, of course, the edition one. I think that's where it's going to get exciting. I don't think people are just going to go in, you know, I mean, some people will buy the 349 model, be happy with the one band, and you're off to the races. But I think when you get into that middle tier and the edition tier, you'll see people that will buy the watch several bands at one time, and that Apple will make that very easy for you to bundle those things up just like a build-to-order Mac, so that you can have the timepiece that you desire and be able to be flexible with it for your different lifestyles.
I mean, so that brings up something that's, you know, it's being discussed a little bit, and that's the whole retail buying experience. You know, what happens when you walk into an Apple store? And they've kind of alluded that it seems Apple's kind of gearing up for it, that there's some speculation you'll be able to walk in and try on different styles with different bands and sort of, you know, get the look and feel. I'm curious how that looks from the back of the house sort of situation.
There's a lot of changes going on. I was talking to an anonymous source at an Apple store who said that they're even looking to hire employees that are familiar with the jewelry business because, you know, when you are having someone try jewelry, you actually touch the person sometimes as they're putting on the device. Mm-hmm. And it's not the typical kind of transaction that the people at the Apple store are used to. So they're going, you know, deep down the well on figuring out how they're going to do this. And then when you think about those gold watches, I mean, I think it's 18 karat. Oh, I should know this.
Yes, 18 karat.
Yes, it is 18 karat.
And so that is expensive gold. And I mean, those things are going to be very valuable. So, you know, I'm sure that someone at Apple has gone in great detail on this. But
well, the rumor is these specialized safes, right, in the back that are going to store the product, the gold product especially, as well as, you know, stuff will be locked up at night. So they're not going to be, you know, sitting out on the shelves or even just in the back. They're going to be in this safe that supposedly has the MagSafe, you know, connectors for making sure that they're charged up for the next day of being out on display and what have you, which that makes sense. But I'm more curious about like the inventory, like because there are so many variations and options. I mean, it's going to be hard for Apple to predict, you know, what's going to sell at which stores and which colors. I'm just thinking about something that I know about when from Apple retail guys, when Apple first introduced the, you know, the 5-color iMacs, they were having so much inventory problems in terms of people like, you know, picking colors. And I think they go through this with the iPods too, right? But you're only dealing with five different colors or five variants or, you know, iPhone 5C. But what would happen back with the iMacs is they found there were like two or three colors that were really popular. And then like, I want to say it was the green and the strawberry and the lime or something like that were like the least popular. And I remember talking to retailers and they're like, yeah, Apple makes us, if we want to get, you know, the popular colors, we have to take one of each of the non-popular colors too and carry those in inventory because Apple didn't want them sitting around in their warehouses, you know, because that's money.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, Dave, what you said about, you know, there being potential hires of people who specialize, you know, in jewelry. I think you're right on the money on that. I think you're going to see the gamut from the mass marketing of the 349 watch where it will be, you know, basic colors and basic table that will have those. Those will be much more available. I think when you step into the middle brand and into the edition, it's going to be another matter. It is going to be more of a jewelry buying experience, you know, where you're standing in front of someone who is probably taking specific bands out for you and having you feel what that feels like, you know, on a pillow, just like you do if you were to go buy a Rolex or if you ever go shopping for Rolexes or those kinds of watches. It's a very personal one-on-one experience. And then from there, I think it does become almost like a build-to-order model where, you know, if they happen to have an inventory, the band that you want or the bands that you want, you can. But I think this is where the online store is going to become crucial because you can go have the shopping experience at the Apple store, perhaps not make that decision that day, but then be able to go online and say, this is what I saw. This is what I want. Let's bundle this up into the watch.
Again, going back to the jewelry thing, though, I mean, isn't that the sort of thing where someone, I mean, they're not going to want to touch and feel and find that perfect style that they want and not walk out with it, right? I think of like going in to buy a ring or a necklace or something like you want, like once you've found the one you want to take it home right then and there, right?
And I think in most cases you'll be able to, you know, it depends on inventory. I think when it comes to the edition, it's a whole other ball game, you know, because you're going to be looking probably at a base price of, I agree with Gruber, $5,000 or thereabouts, if we talk just about the gold value. And then I think those buyers, they're probably going to have marketing enough knowledge from to be able to know what the top bands are that are going to go with that watch. And they'll probably know that ahead of time and have those in stock.
I'm frankly surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if they popped up like exclusive, you know, edition stores, like little mini stores just to sell gold watches, you know, in Hollywood and you know, Paris and New York and like strategic locations.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
High-end clientele.
Right.
Yeah. A friend of mine who lives in Japan says he thinks that the gold watches will be very popular in Asia.
Oh, yeah. I've heard too. Yeah.
Yeah. But the, I don't know. Yeah. And that stuff is still kind of out there. Like, you know, if you have a gold watch and you spend all this money on it and next year they come out with the one with the better processor, you know, I don't think Apple's going to make it where you can drop a new processor in it, you know?
That's been discussed too. I mean, the fact that the processor is all one unit, I could see them having designed something clever where, you know, it might not be something you do yourself, but they do have, you know, the facilities at all those retail stores to potentially, you know, depending on how it's designed, maybe pop it open and swap out a component like that. And it'll be real interesting to see once we start getting teardowns, you know, if that sort of thing is possible. It wouldn't surprise me if it was, but it also wouldn't surprise me if it wasn't. You know, I'm kind of 50-50 on that.
If I had to bet a nickel, I'd say that they'd have, and we probably won't know for a year because why did they need to commit now?
Right.
But I would think that they would probably have some kind of trade-in program where, because the gold in those things is much more valuable than the silicon.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if they say, well, you want to get the new gold one? That's fine. You know, give us your old one, and for some amount of money, you'll get the new one. And you know, who knows? But the
I mean,
either way,
that's
not my market.
Well, there's going to be a big secondary market too. I mean, if these things are only a year old and they're well taken care of, you know, it's look at what Gazelle and these other companies do with iPhones and iPads and stuff like that. There's still a good market in that. So,
yeah.
One of the bummers to me, David, you were talking about browsing all the different faces on the website, is the fact that because of battery life, in essence, you're not going to have that face visible to all at all times. It's, you know, it's going to be black until you turn your wrist, right, and then you'll see your face. And to me, there's a letdown there, because part of owning an analog watch is that you are showing the world what you're made of by, you know, having a Submariner face and dial versus having, you know, a Piaget or something like that. And so it's like, you know, just having this black face with some gold around it. I wish they could do that.
You know, design.
Because you're going to lose something there and not being able to show the world, this is the face I choose.
Yeah, but they're up against the laws of physics, and I mean,
absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, you want it to when you turn your wrist, you can actually see what time it is. And I just don't think there's, you know, there is no magic solution to that. Why is it as thick as it is? Because it needs a battery to get it through the day.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think there's any. I think if they could have made it thinner, they would have, but.
And they will.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
That's the reality. I mean, that's the thing. It's like we talk about this being a Gen 1 product, but it's an amazing Gen 1 product already. We haven't even seen or touched it yet. But, you know. And battery life, I guess they're saying 19 hours kind of in normal usage. Does that seem like it's going to get you where you want, Dave, or does that seem shy to you?
That would be great for me. I mean,
I think it works for me too.
I've been wearing my Pebble for the last 6 months or so.
Me too.
I bought the Pebble and I wasn't really happy with it, and it took them forever to ship it to me. I mean, I saw them in stores for months before I actually got my Kickstarter Pebble.
Oh, were you on the Kickstarter?
I got the orange one, so I guess that meant that I got the orange penalty, whatever that means. But the and so it finally arrived, and I got it out, and the software I thought was pretty, you know, pretty substandard, and I threw it in a drawer, and then I tried it again, you know, when they announced the Apple Watch. I just wanted to kind of get used to using a smartwatch again, and they've updated the software. It's much better now.
It's a lot better than it was. Yeah, I got one pretty early on as well, and did the same sort of thing. I had stopped wearing it because just the utility wasn't there, and then I think once, developers started putting out apps for it, and they, you know, tweaked up the software based on feedback that they got. It became a pretty useful device, and I wear mine most days now.
Getting the text messages on my phone, on my wrist, you know, if I had been using this back when I had the big phone, you know, because I had a brief experiment with the big phone, I might have stuck with it because, I mean, it gets me the information I need now.
Yeah, my killer app still is the Starbucks app that I have that lets me pay with my wristwatch. So I'm all in on Apple Pay with the Apple Watch because I'm already all in with Apple Pay on my phone.
Yeah.
Love Apple Pay.
Me too.
You know, Tim Cook said just this week that their goal is to change people's lives with his watch. That's their objective. Right. You know, he mentioned that just this week. And so that's what they're going for after this market. And I think that they're going to find ways to make that happen, whether it's Gen 1 or beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's very exciting. I mean, I like the you know, there's a reason the three of us podcast and write about this stuff. And I think that Apple's idea about let's make some innovative technology and make it easy for everybody to use, and I buy in. I think it's a great idea, and I can't wait to see what these guys do with a watch.
Okay, so
I would just say if you're listening and you haven't gone to the website, go to the timekeeping page on the website, and you will be excited about this.
Yeah. So I was going to say, you know, talking about products that are going to change our lives, I thought, you know, Victor, you held on for forever about the Apple TV, the actual Apple television.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yep,
and I thought that was crazy. Now we've got this car, an iCar, Apple Car, whatever we want to call it. Somebody snapped a picture. I think it was in Concord, California, of this minivan that had all kinds of cameras and sensors, and I think a satellite unit on it, or what do they call that unit? You know, it's like a infrared, basically all these sensors. And yeah. they tracked it down and realized this thing was registered to Apple. And I guess there's been other reports of seeing them in New York and even Panama City, Panama, for whatever reason. So there immediately began the speculation that, or who, one of the analysts said, oh, well, yeah, Apple's making a driverless car like Google. And then a bunch of other people were like, oh, no, that's crazy. It's, you know, for their mapping effort. So what do you guys think? Have you seen this picture? I mean, are we going to have Apple Motors? Is there going to be an Apple dealership I can go in and pick out my Apple car?
I suspect if there was, you'd need to have a gold Apple Watch to get in the door.
Well, I don't know.
But the
outside your wheelhouse. You know, I thought the TV was getting out there, but I mean, this would be a whole new. I mean, has Tim Cook lost his mind?
No, I agree with Brian Chapin, you know, in his article that he wrote about this, with got me excited and looking at. You know, I say, why not? They reinvented the cell phone, an industry that they were not a part of in any way, shape, or form. And they came out of the blue and reinvented that entire space, not only for, you know, the phone itself, but the phone carriers. And in this case, just like the phone, you can take a very small percentage of auto sales, and that can equal to incredible profits. I think Gruver said that in an article today. I totally agree with that. For example, I was looking at the Tesla site for last year, and their goal was to sell 100,000 cars, and that only equaled to 0.1% of the global market, and they're happy with that. So why wouldn't Apple be able to do the same thing? They have the money to spend on R&D. They have the money to spend on the necessary plants to manufacture efficient batteries for a car like that, and they certainly have the money for the startup cost of such an offering.
So let me back up just to fill the audience in a little bit, because they didn't read Brian's piece. So initial speculation was, okay, this is a mapping thing. And that's where I immediately leaned. I went, okay, they want to do a street view kind of thing. That's what this is. It's got to be what this is. And I was kind of happy with that, you know, making that decision in my mind. And then Brian wrote his piece saying, I have sources at Apple, and they say 80% certainty Apple's working on a car. And then we had also heard from Elon Musk that Apple's been trying to poach Tesla employees. It hasn't been going well for Apple, according to him, but they've been trying to get a hold of employees, offering big signing bonuses and what have you. And then so the story spun into, oh, maybe Apple is developing a car. And I would assume it's an electric car, right? I mean, sort of what the speculation is at this point.
Well, did you see the news that they're not going to be using electricity for their new big building, their campus? Everything's going to be solar powered.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine they'd make a car that ran on gasoline at this point.
Nope.
Right. Yeah. Maybe hydrogen fuel cell. I don't know. But I mean, I'm just trying to think of, you know, what does Apple bring to the car space? And my mind starts racing. Right. You know, How are they going to change our lives with vehicles? And I guess, you know, if they were self-driving, that would be amazing too. So, you know, maybe there's some credence to that side of things. Maybe Apple's just playing around. Maybe this is just R&D, you know. And I think I also have to temper that with understanding too. Like, okay, Apple starts working on these things 5, 10 years, you know, it could be years before we actually see something.
That's right.
Right. Yep. So this is just them looking at technologies. And I mean, this is kind of how they do it, right? They stick stuff together, they try it out. Usually it's a lot more secret.
I'm just curious how you would get in a Johnny Ive designed car, because I'm pretty certain there'd be no door handles.
Well, you just wave your hand, man. Just wave your hand.
Have either of you been in a Tesla? Because that was one question that I have, because I see these Teslas driving around now, right? The Model S. And they have those totally flat door handles. I don't know how those things work.
No, I haven't.
I haven't been in one, no.
So somebody with a Tesla, please tell me. I'm assuming you walk up and it senses you and then the handle pops out or something like that. Or maybe it's like the push, you know, you push it in and the handle pops out. I don't know, but they're totally flat against there is no cavity to pull a door latch up. Or maybe the door just automatically opens when you get near it. I have no idea.
I think the three of us need to take a trip over to the Brea Mall where they have the Tesla store. And you can go in and actually have the experience. They have one there. I heard that's taken apart all the way, so you can see all the components. You know, they have all kinds of stuff. So we should do a field trip just to see what that looks like, because I think that would be interesting. But again, I think Apple has stuff in their labs all the time. I wouldn't put it past them to at least be going for something like this. I did read somewhere that they do not possess, currently in California at least, one of the licenses needed to have a driverless car.
Right.
You know, they don't have one of those yet. But that doesn't mean that they, you know, they're not exploring just a regular electric vehicle that is up to Apple standards.
Well, and they could be there are a dozen or so, I think, companies that do, and they could be partnered up with somebody who could actually be, you know, providing that part.
Well, what I'd like for Apple to do, I guess, in the short term, because I'm not as much of a car guy, I think, as you guys are. But the
I'm not a car guy. I drive a 1999 Subaru.
Yeah, I can afford, and it's great. But the boy, I hate the interfaces in the cars and the, you know, the on screen stuff. And I know they have, you know, Apple in the car. What's it called? The CarPlay.
Oh, I so want one of those.
The reviews of that have been that it's not really very good yet. I would like to see Apple take some of its gazillions of dollars and just really maybe even make an in-dash unit, an Apple in-dash unit, and that I could put in my car, so I don't have to, you know, hate every time I want to change track on my car radio.
I'm kind of most excited about the Parrot one. You know, the Parrot, the company that makes the drones, and they do Bluetooth stuff and things like that. They have a system that is CarPlay compatible. I don't know when it's coming out. I think they were showing it off at CES.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
See, I think that one of the important things to think about here is that where cars are going right now, I mean, we're not as consumers ready for a driverless experience where we just sit back and let the car do everything. But if you'll notice, in current cars, they are slowly training us to be more and more dependent on smart cars. You know, cars that tell you when there are things, you know, on your sides, in front of you, in back of you that could be collisions. Cars that automatically will break the car if you get, you know, if you're not paying attention. These things are all creeping into the space. And to me, those types of applications where you have a driver assisted experience is right where Apple could just fit in and make that truly a holistic experience. You know, it's not just about, you know, like the Tesla has a big 17-inch screen. Well, some would say that's a very distracting thing for safety. Well, it depends how it's being used, and it depends what the use cases are. But if you integrate that to the rest of the computers and the sensors in the car, you can make a case that you can make a safer car by having it be driver-assisted. And again, I think this is where, if Apple is looking at it, this is where they would take it in order to give a different type of driving experience.
Well, and, you know, we always talked about Apple, you know, integrating the living room, right? And now we're talking about Apple integrating the house. And sure. I'm thinking, okay, I've got an Apple Watch on my wrist. I've got an iPhone in my pocket. I've got an Apple TV, you know, at home that's maybe tied into my HomeKit system and home automation. And now I'm driving around in an Apple car that can probably talk to the house, that can talk to my watch, that can talk to my, you know, like, oh my God. And, you know, suddenly everything is integrated. Like everything, every piece of technology or every experience that I'm having throughout the day is integrated, from the most personal on my wrist all the way up to, you know, the entire thing that surrounds my life, you know, that I'm sitting in when I'm in my house. It's just crazy.
And that's happening in the car industry anyways. Regardless of whether Apple does this or not, we're going to see the major car manufacturers leaning towards that total integration as well, you know, with CarPlay or other, you know, devices out there that will be able to integrate with your iPhone, with your watch, you know, and they'll talk that language so that you can have this total integrated experience when it comes to automation.
I've got the automatic device in my car, and
me too.
They're a sponsor of our show, so full disclosure, whatever. I bought it before they sponsored, but the it's great. I mean, it's just great. And then I put it in my daughter's car, and now whenever she gets an engine light, you know, warning, it text messages me.
Isn't that?
I've given the automatic a rough go. Sorry to cut you off, Victor, but I just want to mention that I've been kind of hard on them because, you know, I being self-employed, a big important thing to me, and something I was hoping it would really do would be able to track my, you know, business mileage and stuff like that. And they haven't addressed that issue yet. And it seems like such an obvious use case for me.
Have you done the if this then that rule? Have you tried that?
No, I got to play around with it more. And there's all kinds of cool automation you can do with it. So I, you know, it is a neat thing. And I, you know, I am enjoying it at certain levels. I do like the, you know, if there's an engine light, it being able to tell me, you know, exactly what's wrong. So I know, do I have to get to the mechanic or not? But what was I going to say? So with regards to automatic, I just need to give it, I need to give it more credit, and I need to give them time to sort of take it more places. But oh, I remember what I was going to say, but pretty much another reason I'm down on it is it pretty much just scores me at like 47 every week and tells me how bad a driver I am.
And that brings me to a point.
I do hard stops and fast accelerations. So.
I mentioned this on our show last week, and I'll mention it here. My wife, who used to be an attorney, said to me, really cool that you have that. Really cool that it's teaching you to be a better driver as far as mileage. She said, but if you ever get in an accident, be ready for that data to be subpoenaed now.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it always takes, you know, a lawyer. And I was like, great point, Mary. You know, she says, if you continue to have 50 scores, 40 scores, and you don't get better and you get in that accident, they're going to look at all that back data and say, this is how many hard brakes you had, how many fast accelerations, how many times you went over the speed limit. And that'll be part of that case.
I think actually most of it is the speed limit thing. And I think you can now adjust the software, because I think the default setting was 70 miles an hour. But I mean, even here in California, we have, you know, the I-5, there's places where 75 is the speed limit.
I think it's funny because Victor loves to drive, right?
And I do. Yeah.
I love to be a passenger, and my scores are consistently above 90. So I think the next time the three amigos go to dinner, I might have to drive anyway.
Yeah, I'm sure Victor's scores are better.
I'm getting better, but I started off really badly, and I thought, wow, I have some bad
ass. I have a hybrid, so it's like a game to me. I want to get the maximum gas mileage, so I always brake slow and I accelerate slow. It's kind of been drilled into me with this hybrid.
Yeah, the gamification is part of it, right? It's, you know, beat your score every week.
But really, you know, I could see Apple doing a car, but I'm not. It's like the watch. My feelings on the watch a year or two ago. It's like I'm not really all that excited about it. And I guess I'll just have a wait and see attitude if they do something.
I think it's way out. I think it's something they're playing with. It's not their next product. You know, we're not going to see an Apple car in 2016 or anything.
The alternate explanation of these vans, which the first made a lot of sense to me, is that they're going to start doing Street View.
That would be awesome. Please, I really hope that's what it was.
Yeah, me too. Because
I agree.
That is I think Apple Maps has come a long way. You know. It's funny how some Apple products get like a bad start, and it's just accepted that they suck for then on forward.
Yeah.
And Apple Maps, I mean, I find the data is pretty good. Recently, we were going to a strange place here off the beach in California, and it was the way the roads were designed. It was really hard to get there, and Apple Maps got completely befuddled. And so I said, Google Maps could probably do this. So I loaded up Google Maps, and it got me lost just as well, but it sent me to a different place. I've been generally happy with it, but the Street View is something that I find use for all the time. And
there's value
there.
In it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of value in it, and not having it has been a real bummer. I mean, the flyover stuff is neat from a technology standpoint, but I haven't found a real utility in it.
It demos great.
Yeah.
Street View is actually useful.
Worst case scenario, this Dodge van is for Street View. It's a win.
Yeah.
I don't know if that. I think that's best case scenario.
No, worst. Worst case scenario. I'm saying worst case scenario. Let's say that's all that we're doing. That would make it worth it right there, even if there's no car.
Or maybe those vans have the Apple Black Ops teams that are going out canvassing bars near Cupertino to make sure nobody leaves a watch, you know, on a bar.
There you go.
Well, those are getting spotted all over the place. So yeah. Apple's not doing a very good job of keeping those under wraps because they got people out testing them at this point now. So I don't think they're even trying to hide it. Probably because, you know, the cat's out of the bag. Everybody's seen one. They know what it looks like, sort of thing.
Well, I mean, talking about bad first impressions, if the watch has a bad battery or some other, you know, deal killer at the beginning, it will be very hard to recover from that.
Yeah, there's going to be something. I mean, even if it has a 20-hour battery life, people are still going to say that sucks and it's not enough.
So yeah. We can name it right now, Horology Gate. Horology
Gate. I like it. That's very good. So let's talk a little bit about Tim Cook's Apple, because I mentioned this way back when sort of people were being critical of Tim Cook. And I said, we really need to let Tim Cook, you know, be Tim Cook and sort of create the Apple that he wants to create. And I think he's doing a fantastic job doing that. And one of those things that he's been big on is this whole greening effort, right? And that came out a lot this past week.
Yeah.
In a couple different ways. Specifically, two things, right? They've got this, they're going to help fund a massive solar farm in Monterey County, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And I guess
it's going to power the spaceship.
No, well, that's where I'm confused, because I don't think it's anywhere close to the spaceship. So it's not directly powering the spaceship, right? It seems to me like what's happening is they're buying power from this company at a set rate because it's being generated by the solar investment that they're making. Or there was also a report that I read that said they get some sort of offset credits for like carbon footprint as well.
Right. So First Solar is who they're doing the deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Important factors, 25-year agreement up front. So basically they're going all in, not only with the $850 million, but a 25-year agreement is a long-term agreement. Right. And the way it works with solar energy, it's kind of like in your home. If you put solar panels in your home, you get solar power and it supplies the power from your home. And whatever you don't use, you sell back to one of the utilities, the electric utilities. So I'm guessing here, but I think it's a good guess, that this is the kind of arrangement that Apple is doing with Solar Inc. You know, they're going to do an arrangement where they're going to invest heavily so that they can build the farms that they need. They'll get the energy that they need from Solar Inc. And then if there's leftover, then that will go back into the grid and they'll get credit for
it. How do they get it from Monterey to Cupertino? That seems like a really far distance to me.
I don't know the technical details, but I think it's just part of the electronic grid. And the electronic grid, just like if it was my house and I put solar in, you know, I'm selling back whatever I don't use right back into the grid. And yeah. It's just they're able to measure total usage. That's why they didn't just say we're going to use it for the main campus.
I guess you can carry power really far distances, but yeah. I would think you need infrastructure for that to go over. And
I've got this vision of Tim Cook going in Home Depot saying, give me all of your extension cords,
exactly.
All of them.
Right. I tell you guys.
I don't, there's part of me that loves the idea that this is connected directly to the mothership. And if it goes down,
I don't think it's quite that direct, right? I think it's more like Victor said, it goes into some sort of grid, right? But they're
I want it to be connected, because I want to know that if it goes down, that Johnny can still get his work done. Because that is more important,
well,
you know?
On facility, I'm pretty sure they're going to have those Bloom generators, right, that they install. I think there's a big piece of those that directly power like on site at
the
facility, what do you call those, fuel cells, right?
Yeah. And just so you guys know, great site, apple.com/environment. Mm-hmm. They break it down for you, and they're, this is not their first rodeo when it comes to, you know, using clean power and renewable power. They talk in that website about the North Carolina data center using between 60 and 100% of their renewable energy. It's generated on site using these things called bias fuel cells.
Right.
You know, so they're already doing it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing it there. They're also doing it in the Apple facilities that they just built in a data center. I believe it was Phoenix they talked about that they're doing it. But if you go to that site, it gives you a ton of information of how they're tackling this today in different sites, including talking about how what they don't use will be sold back to Pacific Gas and Electric, again, as much as one would do for their own home.
Yeah. Well, right. It's interesting. And it's a nice, I think it's more than a gesture, but I mean, I think it really is setting an example.
I think I get the impression that this is a passion of Tim Cook's.
And he's,
you know, because he seems all in on this stuff. And I don't think this was even something Jobs maybe even, maybe he thought about it, but I don't think he was as committed. And I think Tim just sort of said, we're going to take the company in this direction. I mean, and it's not just the green energy. I mean, they did, under Jobs' tenure, obviously start addressing a lot of their production issues. And, you know, Tim, I'm sure, was responsible for a lot, overseeing a lot of that. And I think this is just a much bigger extension of that. Or that's what it feels like to me.
One of the cool parts about it is that, it being his passion, he can also go right back to the investors and say, this also makes fiscal sense.
Yeah.
From a financial point of view, you can't argue with this. So he can have his cake and eat it too, as far as the passion for green initiatives, and then telling his investors, guess what? This is a good use of our money as well. So it's cool. And it's not only there, it's in how they make their products and how they ship their products. Again, if you go to that environment page at apple.com, they get into really nitty gritty details of things that they've done just in packaging to be able to lower the cost of airline fuel when they're shipping stuff. It's really a great tribute to what Tim Cook thinks about this and how they're tackling it from all these different points of view.
Right. And we also got word that, you know, with the GT Advanced facility, they're going to turn that into a data center. That's going to kind of be the hub of all of their data centers at some point, and that will again be powered by solar and renewable energy and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, and I said Phoenix, I meant Reno, Nevada data center. So there's Primville, Oregon data center, and the Reno, Nevada data center, where they're applying this design of solar arrays that are due to come out later this year to, again, create energy right on site.
And it's interesting, the Primville one too, I think they're using hydro power as well. I think they rerouted a water source, and they're doing, they call it micro hydro system.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to the green initiative, I think that he's doing a good job running the company just as the traditional Apple products, you know.
I think as a stockholder, I will agree with you.
Yeah.
It's,
you know, all this money they're making. But not only that, I mean, but just it seems like they're making the right kinds of decisions. The only decision I questioned over the last year was the 16-gigabyte iPhone. I thought that was a mistake.
Agreed.
And
they're still making that mistake.
That seemed to me like, well, I mean, the decision was made last year when we heard about it. But it seems to me like that one, I have a hard time understanding what the business reason was for that, other than, wow, guys, we get to save some more money, you know. But and I don't even know if that makes sense, because I can't imagine the engineering resources they're going to have to put into keeping the iOS down to fit on a 16-gigabyte device for the next 2 or 3 years are going to be small.
That's something they definitely didn't think about, because there's a legacy to that, unfortunately, especially with even more so with than iPhones, is the iPads, right?
Yeah.
Because people are holding on to their iPads for, you know, PC lengths of time, which is, I think, why we see this longer selling cycle and sort of the slowing of iPad sales. It's not something that concerns me like it concerns some people, because I just see this as, well, you know, eventually these people are going to upgrade, but it's just not on the same, you know, they're not upgrading every year like people do with phones. So they have to support the OS on those systems that are going to be around 2, 3, maybe 4 years.
Right.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Well, to your point, Dave, I think that Tim Cook Apple, I love that they're more open. They really are. They're more visual. They're in the news more. Tim is in the news more. He's talking about this stuff, you know, in different venues and in different opportunities. And I just think that the company continues to be innovative and doing all the stuff that we loved about Apple. But then what Tim has brought is this humanity to the company that I personally feel was lacking. You know, and I love that about what Tim did with the company.
One of the first things he did was, you know, the contribution matching. We had someone, you know, we did on our show, we were talking about App Camp for Girls, and we had an Apple employee write in saying, oh, yeah, I'm donating through Apple, and now they're matching my contribution to App Camp. And
that's awesome.
That wasn't happening.
Gotta love that. Yeah, you gotta love that.
Just getting back to kind of, you know, the hole that Steve Jobs leaves is, I mean, he was a very good product guy. I never really appreciated it until I took the 2-day class with Sal Segoyan years ago at Macworld, you know, the AppleScript. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how, you know, this guy would come in and see right through the product and figure out, know immediately where the weak point was. And you hear that from so many different people that you're like, wow, that was really something special. Well, Tim Cook's not trying to be that. But they do have a team of really smart people, and he's letting them do their thing while he does his thing. And it seems to be working. And so I don't know. I mean, you can't argue with the results, can you?
No, nope. Not at all. And I think, you know, for all those detractors, you know, a year or 2 years ago, we were saying, oh, well, Apple's doomed because Tim, you know, Jobs is gone and Tim Cook's is taking over. I think this is just the proof. You know, it's like, so I have to have this feeling that, you know, and the Apple is doomed stories keep coming, right? They're never going to stop coming. But I think right. Apple's ultimate sort of answer to that is always just, look, you know, here's our numbers.
Yeah.
And I think that
you're
in
wrong.
In the end,
to say it.
One of the greatest legacies that Steve left us was Tim and this team that he left behind and seeded in order to be able to fill that gap that you talked about, David. I think that'll be one of Steve Jobs' greatest legacies in the end. What was not only that he left us with great products and innovations, but he left this group of people who are now taking, you know, this culture, this DNA that is able to carry forward with his vision.
Yeah, I think he made mention of that in the official biography that, you know, one of his greatest products was the company itself and the way they work. And, you know, it's great. I just recently went on a tour of the Disney studio up in Burbank and, you know, and Lucky. Walking around there. What?
Lucky.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I got to go in Walt's screening room and everything. I felt like such a boss. But walking around there, the people were telling me how much trouble they had after Walt died and how they lost their way. And it seems like Apple has not had that problem. And that's really impressive because that's two companies that were founded by very influential people.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I think my favorite part about it is, and I think Tim even mentioned that, you know, Steve said, you know, you take the company and you do what you think you should do. And I think that was the most powerful thing he probably could have done. I think Tim Cook probably would have done that anyway. But to have that blessing, you know, was a great thing. And I think it's just proven out. I think with the changes that, you know, we're noticing from the outside, and I just imagine how many more are on the inside, that, you know, it's proving to be an amazing thing. You know, we trust you to take the company. You know what our foundation is. You know what our core values are. You know, but you don't have to run it the way I would run it. You run it the way you would run it within those parameters, and great things are going to happen.
Even reading the Steve Jobs biography, he fought really hard to keep the iPod off the PC. You know, don't put iTunes, don't just make it work the Mac. He didn't want to and begrudgingly agreed. I mean, you know, he's not around anymore, so you can't take something that he said. Like, you know, a good example is this recent thing about the stylus, you know. So there's a rumor that there's going to be a stylus. Yeah. And famous. He said when he announced the iPhone that if you have a stylus, you blew it. Well, first of all, the rumors about a stylus for the iPad and the context of that was about the phone.
Right,
and second, you know, now these iPads have grown to such an extent that artists want to use them and they want to make it a good product for them. And why not give them the tools they need to make great art on their iPad? I mean, Microsoft is doing it and people seem to like it. You know, so it's funny.
Use a stylus times, now.
Yeah, like, so times change, and who's to say that if Steve, you know, didn't get that terrible disease and was around, he wouldn't be saying, "Hey guys, we need stylus for this thing."
Well,
you know,
Steve's right. Famous for his 180s as well, though. I mean, he also famously said there'll never be video on an iPod like 6 months before there was video on an iPod.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So yeah, I don't think that was a 180. I think that was a little bit of a diversion.
I think he said, "Don't ask what would Steve do."
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great statement right there.
And I don't think they are. And I think that's what's made this past, you know, couple years just amazing. And I think I'm more excited about Apple than I ever have been. You know, and I know a lot of people just keep calling it into question, but I just keep looking at the product lineup. You know, we've got Apple Watch coming. Tim's promised a bunch of other things that we don't even know about. I can't even imagine that. You know, and again, I don't think it's cars yet, but someday maybe. I'm super jazzed about what's going to happen with HomeKit and home automation. I think there's going to be huge impacts in that space over this next year that we haven't even thought about yet. As the companies start to bring out products and Apple certifies things and we start seeing things integrated. And again, I think the other half of this is, Apple puts out the hardware, they put out the technologies and they put out the operating system. But where the real magic happens in my mind is when developers get their hands on the SDKs and the kits and consumers get their hands on the product, and then Apple's able to see where those folks take it from both sides, from the consumer side, how consumers interact and respond and use the products, and then developers, taking that and riffing on it. Then we've always had this great creative environment, and I think it extends like that, and the products sort of take on a life, I think, even beyond what Apple hopes for them when they introduce them to the world. And that's where a lot of the magic happens for me as well.
I'm excited this year. I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with content providers in the video space. Yeah. And what the next generation of the Apple TV is going to give us. I mean, those are the things I'm really looking forward to, because I think there's some shakeups going on. Right.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about cars, but what about the Apple TV? I mean, I guess we're probably out of time, but
we can talk about that a little bit.
That's something I think they're behind on. And yeah. I still like my Apple TV because I'm fully invested in the Apple, ecosphere. I buy the movies from iTunes, so it's really the natural solution for me. But I feel like that thing has lingered, and their competitors have come out with some pretty innovative solutions recently. And you keep hearing the rumors that they've got smart people working on this, and they've got something really cool planned and blah, 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 blah. But that's something I sure would like to see before a car is make my TV better, Apple.
And I can't help but think, Dave, that the reason for that is not a technological one, that it is, again, it's just like we think back to the iTunes music store. It's making the deals with the content providers. Content providers like HBO are finally cutting the cord. They're going to let people buy stuff, on its own. And I think Apple is in the midst of making that happen and bringing that on board in whatever this next generation of the Apple TV is. And I'm suspecting that's what's holding it back, not their ability to make the widget that does the magic things we want it to do, content.
You know what's interesting is I think more than a year ago, maybe even long before Netflix and Amazon and some of these providers started producing content, I threw it out there that I thought, at some point maybe Apple needed to be the distribution channel, but also sort of the producer, the studio for a lot of independent artists. And I think I was kind of riffing off. It was right as sort of video podcasts were taking off. And I really thought Apple might have an opportunity to step in and create original content for their platforms, and help fund these shows that didn't need huge budgets, but, needed some money and some ways to get produced and get off the ground. And I'm surprised we haven't seen Apple do that yet. Either through partnering with someone, and I think maybe because there's a lot of competition in that space, but, maybe Apple needs to buy somebody who's doing that, or maybe they need to start thinking about, creating original content. Because I think you're right, Victor. I get the sense that, the big studios and stuff that are just too leery and not willing to play. And I still think Apple's primely positioned with how much cash they have on hand, with the connections that they have in those industries, with their reach into, with podcasts and stuff like that, with the distribution platform through iTunes and Apple TVs, with how many Apple TVs are out there. They could blow up the space if they really wanted to jump in and take over. And I'm frankly surprised that they haven't.
And I think they will. I think you're right on. I mean, and we're seeing the seeds. Netflix, several wonderful shows they've put out. Amazon recently, if you haven't seen Transparent, an incredible series put out by Amazon that, just won a Golden Globe. I think Apple's going to do exactly that, Adam. And they're going to put, but it's just a matter of them picking the right pieces to be able to go in there and all of us say, well, of course, I'll buy, the full season and I can't wait for the next one. So I think we're going to see Apple-provided content.
I could see them staying out of this as well, though. I mean, when you look at Microsoft, NBC, and you look at Sony, and you look at all these other technology companies, it's a really good way to divert your attention.
Well, that was my worry, at the time. Yeah, I'm totally with you there, too. But I don't know how else they're going to crack this TV space if they can't get the studios to play ball.
Yeah. But putting aside the contractual issues and all that stuff, I think that their competitors are eating their lunch anyway with just the existing models, with channel availability, the ability to stream from a, you know, a hard drive video. And it's just like the Apple TV just is not in the forefront of those options that you'll see on a Roku or some of the other devices out there right now. And it just doesn't seem like they're even really pushing the envelope there. And my pet theory is that they've got something really cool they're working on, and they don't want to spend a lot of time on the existing Apple TV platform because they're going to have something better soon. But that soon just keeps stretching longer and longer.
I got a question for you in that space. And I'm trying to think about, you know, people that I've talked to, and I talk about viewing habits and screen habits with from time to time. And this isn't a lot, but it comes up every once in a while. And just thinking even in my own family, we have an Apple TV, and I think most of the time we're using it, it's to watch either purchased or rented movies from iTunes. But in terms of like TV consumption or those sorts of things, you know, your more serial kinds of content, be it podcast or video podcast or TV content, my family, it's all one screen, one person most of the time.
That's not true at my house.
iPads and you know.
My kids watch Netflix off the Apple TV more than they watch regular TV, by far.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, but I'm saying I know a lot of people who are turning those their iPads on at night, and that's where they're consuming their content. So I have to wonder if Apple's looked at those numbers and went, well, you know, yeah, there's a lot of people using Rokus and these boxes and stuff like that, but we already have more people consuming this content through, you know, the CBS app or the ABC app or the Hulu app or the you know, Netflix app or the that app on their iPad or their iPhone screen. I'd be really curious to know in America, you know, how those screens break out. Who's watching what on which screens that are available in their house now?
Yeah, in my household, we use a Roku and watch an awful lot of TV together, big screen TV. Mm-hmm. You're not doing as much of the one-to-one stuff that you're talking about, Adam, although I'm sure there's a lot of that going on out there.
It's interesting, yeah.
I mean, the whole TV thing, you know, the joke is, I'm seeing this firsthand with my kids, and Adam, you're probably seeing it too, is our kids don't care about the network programs. My kids want to watch YouTube.
Yep.
Or they want to watch Friends from 20 years ago or something. They just don't care about, I just think the whole thing is, I think it's ripe for disruption because, you know, kids today, but I mean, they just really don't care about the network stuff. And
I'm giggling because I'm going to close this out with, I think, my little form of disruption here. So Disney finally released Black Hole.
Oh, really?
On streaming.
Yeah.
And I'm a child of that period, right? A child of the 80s. So I immediately bought it with all this nostalgia in my heart for this movie. You know, it's got Ernest Borgnine in it. Come on.
Yeah.
And I remember the robots, and I remember everything, you know, thinking everything was so cool about it. What a weirded out movie.
Yeah. That was rough.
I made my kids watch it, and they just like, what is this?
Well, you know, I just said I was at the Disney studio, and they had in the archives, they had a bunch of stuff there for Black Hole. And the archivist was sitting there looking at it with me. I said, that was a strange movie. And he says, yes, it was. You know,
there's this
up,
whole
though?
Heaven and hell thing going on. They kind of allude to it at the beginning. And like my kids are like, what happened to the, I don't want to give away the end for anybody who hasn't seen it, but you know, the end part, they're like, what? I don't get what's going on. And I'm like, I don't get what's going on either. I don't remember any of this from when I was a kid. All I remember was the two cool robots and spaceships. And I don't know, maybe an 8-year-old brain, you know, just thinks a lot differently.
You don't really hold 80s. Up from our childhood though. E.T. You got to go watch E.T.
again. Oh, yeah. We've done that.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. At least, Adam, you have a title for the show now.
Well, this is the Amigos episode. I don't know if we'll do a different title, but yeah, that would be a good title.
Black Hole.
The Black Hole.
I think this is where we've gone.
Well, it's where we're going to end it, at least.
There you go.
Hey,
I think we got to do one of these with us in a restaurant somewhere. Just run a recorder. Fly Ken out. Let's just do it.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
I'm in. When and where? Let me know.
All right. We'll do it when we all have our fancy watches.
Cool.
Oh, I forgot. Can I ask one question about the watches? Do you guys know which one you want at this point?
I know what I'm going to go for and probably change my mind the minute I see the other one. So my intent right now, because it is a Gen 1 product and I know I'm going to want the Gen 2 the minute it comes out, is just to not spend a lot of money up front on the first Gen product. So I figured I was going to get the sport model just so I get the experience, because, you know, as far as I know, there's nothing else different beside the materials in the bands, right?
Well, also the glasses.
Well, materials, right?
Okay,
it's the casing, the glass, or the band. The innards are all the same. They all have the same functionality. There's not extra stuff there. So when you're spending your money, you're spending for higher-end materials, basically, which is kind of a jewelry mentality to me. And I know I've never been about that. So I'm more about the tech function. And so the 349 one is going to function technologically exactly the same as the $5,000 gold one.
As someone newly self-employed, I will be there with you, Adam.
and it's also, like I said, because it's a Gen 1 product, so I'd rather save the money, because I think, you know, there's going to be huge improvements as new generations come out, and we don't know about any kind of upgrade path. So, you know, not with those kind of questions. That's where I'm leaning right now. Now, that said, the one that I really want is the stainless sapphire glass model. So it's going to come down to how much more is that. And I'm hearing 500 being the number thrown out, like starting around 500, maybe 550, 600. And that might just be a little steep for my blood. I don't know.
I'm right with you. I'm saying I want the sports one, but I'll bet you I get the stainless.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on the price.
Yeah.
Well, and one question I have too is, and this may change my mind as well, is I don't think there's anything special about the latching mechanism in terms of how the bands connect. So I don't see if there's any reason why you couldn't replace the rubber or plastic sports band with a nicer band at some point.
One of my big problems with watches is that the clasp always kind of jacks up the wrist pad on my MacBook Pro, because I'm wearing the watch and I'm scratching it with that. So I actually usually prefer, I buy bands for my watches quite often that don't have a clasp at the bottom.
Right.
So I can use it with my computer, because I'm that guy who doesn't like to scratch it up. So
what does Apple have for that option? I think it's only the Milanese loop, right?
They've got a leather, like one with a magnetic clasp that kind of pulls over, and that would probably be the one I would go with. But yeah, it is. Isn't it fun just speculating about this? We have no idea what it's going to cost, and I know that I'm sitting here salivating over the web page, and you know, it doesn't happen too often that you have something brand new from Apple, and I am so down with this. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. All right. Well, I think that's going to end it right there. So thank you guys both for coming on and helping me out while I'm on vacation. And it's always fun to get an Amigos show together. Hopefully we'll be able to get Ken in next time. And we'll keep trying to do these every once in a while. Maybe we'll do them more frequently as we get feedback and stuff like that. But thanks for coming on. So we'll just go around, let people know because we all have our own shows. People know mine, MattCast.com, but Dave, where can people find you and check out what you're up to and follow you and all that fun stuff?
I'd say two places. If you go to MaxSparky.com, that's kind of my home on the internet. It's got links to all the books I write and the stuff I do. And also MacPowerUsers.com is the podcast that I do with Katie Floyd every week. And there's lots of good stuff there too.
Yep. And Victor, you've got your new show with George. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going well. We're doing one per month. It's called Articulate, and you can find it at articulate.info. So go over there and subscribe. And then the other place I want you to find me is at Twitter, at Victor Cahiao.
Can I just say that I'm thrilled that Victor Cahiao is back on the internet?
Yes, oh, thanks, me too.
Yeah. I'm happy to be back with such esteemed company.
So go subscribe, follow, have fun. And maybe we'll be back with that episode that Dave's talking about when we all get our Apple Watches. I think we have to do that. We'll make it happen. So join us back here then.
All right.
Adios.
So there you have it.
the Amigos show with Dave and Victor. It was great having them on again. I love doing these shows for you, and I know many of you enjoy them as well. If you have any comments or questions on it, of course, you can email me, maccast@gmail.com. But with that, that's going to do it for this episode. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors, Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label, also Text Expander Touch for your iOS devices, as well as PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can check out all the great software from Smile by going to smilesoftware.com/maccast. I'd also like to thank Gazelle. Gazelle is the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. And lynda.com. Lynda.com helps you learn and keep up to date with your software, pick up brand new skills, or explore new hobbies with their easy-to-follow video tutorials. You can get a free trial by going to lynda.com/maccast. That's lynda.com/maccast. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. I'd also like to thank CashFly for providing the bandwidth for the MacCast. You can find them at cachefly.com, and all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They're at backbeatmedia.com. As always, if you have any comments, any feedback for me, you have a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send me an email. The email address is maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave a voicemail there. You're also welcome to leave voicemail on Skype, and my Skype address is the MacCast. If you need show notes, links to anything that I've talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the forum at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me online between shows, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/maccast. You can also check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, and we have a Google Plus community. Just search for MacCast on Google Plus and you will find us there. But with that, that's going to do it for now. Until next time, I'll talk to you all again real soon.